Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
And I'm Tyson Deskins. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the Spin Axis Podcast and share this with all of your golfing crew.
As you may have already heard, we had some issues with Jason's audio. He was traveling, and I've made it as listenable as I can. This episode and the next one will have the same audio effects, but I hope it's still listenable to you, and I think we have some good information to share in this show. So I apologize in advance, but we made the best of it that we could.
So this week's episode, we're going to talk about how to plan your off-season work. Sadly, it is the time of the seasons where most of us, now, not everyone, there's always those beautiful places that you can golf year round, but most of us are going to go into a bit of an off season. So how do we
plan? Is there off season though in the summer? If you're in Southern Florida, is your off season the summer?
That's a great question.
I think they still play a lot of golf, but I think it's kind of their off season. So
yeah, when it's like 120.
Like a lot of people in the northern half of the US, you're starting to enter your off season for sure.
And Canada. Don't forget about us.
I said the northern part of the United States.
Which that includes Canada, I guess.
I think we assimilated you already.
I don't know about that.
I like it.
All right.
Okay. So back to the topic, how to plan an off-season work. I would actually say that most of the off-season work should happen before the off-season starts. Like Tyson, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I think we're always getting ready for the off-season, right? Even during the season, we're using a lot of what happened during our season to plan for what we're going to do in the off-season.
So what do you mean? You have to look back at your stats, essentially.
I think if you're serious about getting better, A, you need to be tracking some stats, which a lot of people just find, I guess.
Number of beers per round.
Number of hot dogs at the turn.
How many putts?
Amount of bets won.
Right?
Yeah. No, actual stats. Yeah, we know what those are.
Actual stats. I think we got to keep those. In order for you and your coach to build the best plan, you've got to have something for your coach to go off of. I think then it starts with, all right, let's go through a pretty solid evaluation. All right, where are you currently? And based off of those stats, where do you want to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, love it. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, and it's important when looking at those stats to understand that the gaps between one skill level and another. So if you're a 6 handicap and you want to become a scratch, that doesn't mean, or let's make it easier. If you're an 8 handicapper and you want to become scratch, A, that's a big jump. But let's just say you're looking at it and you're losing 2 strokes in driving, 2 strokes in approach, 2 strokes in short game, and 2 strokes in putting. That doesn't mean you have a well-rounded game. That means your putting is terrible, your short game is not good at all, and you're actually decent off the tee and approach shots, because off the tee and approach shots should be, on average, if you're well-rounded, if you don't have a glaring weakness, about 2/3 of your strokes lost. You should be losing 5.5 shots out of your 8 off the tee and approach shots in the full swing. If you are losing 1/4 of your shots or 1/2 your shots short game and putting, or 1/4 of your shots putting, those are glaring weaknesses, and those are ripe for taking off some shots pretty quickly. Generally speaking, unless you have some physical ailment or something like that that prevents you from hitting the ball far enough to gain a lot of strokes off the tee or some other things like that, then you should be, the stats are not all evenly spaced. You know, they shouldn't be like that. So it's important to look at your stats in the right way. If you play a home course that has a ton of fairway bunkers, that's going to throw your stats up. If you play a home course where your greens are massive, your greens and regulation stats are going to be high and your putting stats are going to be worse. That doesn't mean you're good at approach shots and terrible at putting. It just means you have more 80-foot putts that count as a green in regulation than most people do. So it's important to consider some of those specific things when building your plan, but definitely look at your stats before you build an off-season plan. From there, where do you go, Jason?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, first things first is knowing where your weaknesses are. Like just talked about, if you have big greens, what's your average approach to the pin, right? Is it 80 feet? Okay, yeah. Like Eric said, you're going to be 3 putting of those. And strokes gain should help with that. Like you might hit, let's say, 12 greens in regulation, but your approach might be bad because guess what? You're hitting it to 50 feet every time. That's not good. Driving and irons most of the time is where higher handicaps are going to cut massive amounts off your handicap. Lower your scores. Can you get the ball in play as far as you can? And then can you hit more greens in regulation, even if it's
those are the biggest gains that you make. You can make faster gains short game and putting in season, but bigger gains are made in the off season with the full swing. Agreed?
Yeah. And one of my favorite quotes, and I really should Google this, I think I might have said it before, was your drive and your iron are going to dictate how high you score, and your wedges and your putter are going to dictate how low you can score. So when you get somewhere around that, like, you know, 6-4-2 handicap, if you have no glaring weakness, it's probably your wedge, short game, and your putting that is stopping you from shooting in the pars or better consistently. So, and what do you need to work on? You need to find out what that is. And then for me, I like most of my better players to journal their rounds. I want to know what are causing your bad shots, because again, strokes gain is going to go like, oh yeah, you're not hitting it close enough to the pin. Why is that? Because it doesn't know what your intent was. It doesn't know that the wind was into you and you forgot about the wind, or you hit it a little bit off the toe. It doesn't care what that was. It's just going to say you were 40 feet from that pin from 100 yards out. Well, that's terrible. And if you don't know what it is, again, what you need to work on, you're just going to bang your head doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah. So once you decide what you need to do with your full swing, let's assume you're going to work on your full swing. You're going to work on short game and putting a little bit here and there. Some people work on putting. You can't. Honestly, I find it tough to work on your putting for 4 times a week for 5 months. Okay. But this is someone that works on this putting 4 times a year, maybe.
Well, and players don't work on their putting during the season, let alone during the off season.
Yeah. No, off season putting can be very boring because the people that buy 10-foot mats, honestly, I don't know how they would do. I don't do it. I have a 2,000 square foot putting green that I rarely practice on, but. Just if you buy a 10-foot mat, I don't know what you're doing. You know, sure, you're going to practice 3-footers for 7 minutes one time and then you're bored. But okay, so mostly the full swing. I think we all kind of agree with a lot of your work is going to be there. Winter can be a great time, I think, or off season can be a great time to put into effect a larger change. It may not be an overhaul. It might just be something that, you know, if you're used to squaring the face up one way and you want to learn the better way to do it, you don't want to play golf that way immediately because maybe every ball goes left for like a month and stuff like that. So winter can be a great time to remove the pressure of having to score and not lose your Pro V1 and not worry about how far it goes and not worry about what direction it goes and trust that it will get there in the end. That requires a lot of trust, though, that you and your instructor know what they're talking about and that you can do it the right way. So what is the right way to practice over the winter? First, you have to get with a coach and find a good plan. And I would say you need a roadmap. You say, okay, we have 5 months. You're going to do this for a month and a half-ish. You're going to do this for a month and a half-ish. And then toward the end of that, we're going to kind of ramp that up to speed. Maybe, right? Just as a theoretical thing. Whatever your plan is, you want to tackle one or two little things because they can take a while, even if they're small changes, especially if you're a 2 handicapper. You know, they might seem small, but they are delicate because you're a 2. So you don't want to become a 7 overnight. You want to become a scratch. So what do you do? How do you work on that?
I always start with, like you said, what's the root cause? So for instance, one guy that's working on his swing right now is casting it. Why is he casting? Because the face is not staying in a stable position from the top coming down. The second he starts working down from the top, cupped lead wrist, right? And then from there, his brain already goes, oh, face is getting open. Let's start throwing out that angle. This is a functional pattern. Just not a good pattern because it also leads into fats and thins and some stalls. So, okay, what do we need to do? Well, we need to make sure that you don't cup that lead wrist, which feels weird for him. Okay, what's our first goal? Can we do it at 1% speed? Then 10% speed.
Nobody does it at 1% speed.
I do.
Nobody does it at 40% speed. Effortless. You ask for 40 and you get 75.
Yeah. It did take a lot of time, but I mean, it's always fun demonstrating somebody like a full swing and it goes 5 miles per hour, like club head speed. And they're like, oh my gosh, that looked weird. And I'm like, I know it feels weird, but that's what you need right now to be able to move that pattern. You know, it's like, if you needed to learn how to walk again, you know, you'd be in PT and they'd be like with the little bars and you'd be slowly taking little baby steps and finding out, okay, how do you land into your heel and roll onto the foot? Same thing, learning a new pattern in the golf swing. You need to do it a little bit slower, a little bit less pressure. Just remove a couple elements. Turn off your screen if you have a simulator. Don't care about that, right? Can we just get some good feedback into that? You know, watch yourself on a...
In a lot of ways, I think simulators, people build their own home simulators and stuff. I think they're almost terrible for practicing. I think it's in some ways, they're great for practicing if you can do them the right way, use them the right way. They're terrible though, because the temptation to see how far you hit the ball and to play golf and to care about what the shot shape was and all that stuff is right there all the time.
Totally agree.
The good practitioners can just turn off the stuff that they don't care about or not care that the 7-iron they just hit went 120 because that's the speed they're at right then. They know they have 170 in the tank, but they're fine hitting it 110 right now. But the temptation is there, especially if you don't own the sim and you're paying to go use it. It's really tough to practice at a sim the right way. If you've been listening to this podcast, you probably already know the importance of doing things like centering your shot pattern between hazards off the tee, being properly aggressive into the greens, and knowing where and how you both gain and lose shots during your rounds of golf. Shot Pattern is the golf strategy GPS app that allows you to do those things and more in real time on the golf course. Shot Pattern's tournament legal display allows you to quickly overlay your shot dispersion on the hole in front of you to pick smarter targets and shoot lower scores. The practice mode has even more for you to learn and improve. SpinAxis listeners can learn more and receive 20% off a one-year subscription by visiting shotpattern.app/spinaxis.
Yeah. You know, I did a little quick little video of how to hit a golf ball on a driving range so you can go collect all the golf balls in the bucket. And the guy that I was just chatting with, he's like, that's amazing. I would have never thought to do that. It's like, I just live like 2 blocks from here, but yeah, I could come here. I could hit 400 golf balls like that.
Yep.
For sure you could. And you can work on that and you can change that big pattern that you need to without spending $150 every time you come to the driving range to try and, you know, hit golf balls 20, 25 feet or whatever.
Yep. And I always say, I think the roadmap and whatever you're trying to build, I think it has to be measurable, right? And I'll tell you, I literally just did one of these today with one of my high school kids. Just played in the state tournament. They're already in here wanting to build a plan for next year, right? They're going to be a senior in high school. So I got force plate data. I got TrackMan data. I got Hack Motion data. I got 3D data. We really didn't talk about what needs to happen yet. I just got all the data so I then can look at it and start to build that roadmap for the player over the coming weeks to get their off season started. Then you can start to actually see, are you getting better? Or are you not getting better because we have all the data recorded from the very beginning?
Smart. I like it.
The temptation to jump ahead, though, I have a sign in my academy that talks about how,
oh man,
I've used this a bunch. You don't have to be motivated. Motivation comes and goes. It's tough to, you can't be motivated for 5 months unless you're a freak in a good way, like super driven. Like, I have no doubt that Tiger Woods, when he was 15, was super highly motivated. And if you said, this is going to take 6 months, he'd be like, all right, I'm in. But that's rare. That's incredibly rare.
Yep.
You don't have to be motivated every day. What you do have to be is disciplined. And that's what the sign in my academy says. Discipline will take you places that motivation can't dream of for most people. Even on days when you don't feel good, go in and put in some work because you might find something. You might advance yourself a little bit. If it's a bad practice session and you're not feeling it, chip and putt for a little while. Do something else, but put in some time. Still make yourself go, because when one day you don't feel like it, snowballs into two, snowballs into three, and then by then it's been a week and you haven't done any work. And then you go back. And discipline means go slow at first. It means do not try to hit your 7-iron 170 just because it's been a week that you've been working on stuff. You have 5 months. I tell my juniors, like from my winter program, you don't have a meaningful round of golf probably for the next 5 months. So who gives a crap if you can't hit the ball for into mid-December because you're swinging slowly, you're making a change that's still foreign to you, and so on. So have the discipline. That's one of the biggest things to do, because if, let's say you have two things you kind of want to work on and you say, I have 5 months to do this. If you try to jump ahead to thing two and it's been 2 weeks, thing one is going to unravel. Thing one is going to fall apart. You might be able to do it at 70% speed, but it's when you have full attention and 70% speed. But if you try to jump ahead and be like, oh, those last three swings look good, I'm going to start working on piece two now. No. Right. It's going to unravel in 3 days.
You mean when they say, oh, I got it. They don't actually got it.
Yeah. Cause they hit one shot good. Yes. Or it looks good on video at 70% speed twice.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing.
And you're also going to go from having it to not having it.
Yep.
For like a couple weeks. And like, even myself, like there's been times I remember I made a funny video, but it was true. Like that happened that night where I was like, I figured it out. I found the feel that enables me to hit good golf shots. And I hit shots for like 10, 15 minutes. I wrote it down. I made like a little video message to myself. Here are my feels. Here's what I want. Packed them away, went to sleep, you know, took 2 days off because of the weekend, didn't hit any balls. Come back Monday, watch the video, hit some shots. Nope, it's not there. gosh darn it. And it took me another 3 or 4 days to like find a little bit of that again. And then, you know, it came and went. But you're just trying to always build, right? You're just like slowly working that feel. And sometimes you need to increase it or, you know, alter it a little bit. But you have, like you said, a roadmap of like that feel. It's not going to click right away. Just like anything, like, you know, think about any other sport. Nothing clicked instantly. You never became like a high tier basketball player overnight. It was like weeks and months and years of practice. Same thing with hockey. And, you know, like, oh, you got the slap shot down? No, you don't have it down. Like it's, and then the one timer? No, you don't have that down. You're going to whiff in a game. You know what I mean? But you practice and practice and practice to that one opportunity to do it in a game. And then all of a sudden you sort of half do it. The goalie doesn't catch it. And you score. Awesome. You know what I mean? Golf's no different. You're going to have it. You're going to lose it. You're going to have it. You're going to lose it. But it's just the enjoyment of the journey of being disciplined, like Eric said, is going to be how you get through that off-season plan.
I always say you have to embrace the suck, because there's just going to be times where you think you got it, like you said, Jason. And when somebody tells me that, it's funny that you said what you said, because I always tell them, don't go to sleep, because as soon as you go to sleep, you're going to lose it, right? So you have to embrace the up and down that the journey of this whole thing
is. It's not a concussion, guys. You can go to sleep. Sleeping is actually where you learn too. Your brain does a lot of processing there.
You know, as soon as we think we got it, man, we hope that thing lasts for as long as possible.
Jokingly, we've talked about joking about sleep, but rest is in one of our notes. But rest during the session is important too. I have found that some of my best sessions are, and I've seen psychologists and stuff recommend this too, but take 5 minutes and try to do nothing. Try, like, if you can kind of scroll on your phone and absentmindedly look at some memes or something like that, fine, maybe. But try to do almost nothing. Like, I'll do menial stuff. Like, I'll tidy up some things and do some stuff that you don't have to think about a lot. Whatever. Just walk around. Go get a drink of water. You know, stuff like that. Just do stuff you don't have to think about. Somehow they've determined that when your brain is doing that, and I might get this backwards, it plays those actions in reverse. And then when you go to sleep, it plays them forward. I don't know how they know that, or maybe it's just what part of your brain lights up in sequence or something like that, but your brain can process things even when you're not actively thinking about the thing. I've told people in lessons for the past several months, just process that the ball went a little to the left, but don't try to fix it. Just note it. Just say, okay, that ball went left. Or, oh, I'm towing them today, but don't necessarily try to fix that. Just take it in, let your brain process it in the background. You'll probably make adjustments without having to actively think about it. So rest during a session. What I would often do when I was having my big winter thing a while ago, I would hit 6 balls and then go kind of pick them up and like make a nice little pattern with them. I built like basically a big pyramid on the ground of like balls. So I'd make a big row on the bottom and then kind of build up the sides of the triangle. And it was stuff I didn't have to think about, but it took 2 minutes between hitting 6 balls, and it kind of let my brain just process and stuff like that. And also let me forget what it felt like to do the swings that I just made. And so I had to recall it then when I went back, and I would go back again, maybe a little bit, tiny bit slower on that one. So rest, even during a session, is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll oftentimes just jump in and start talking to a player when I see them struggling, and you can see that they just need a break. I'll just start talking to them during a lesson, not because I like to talk, but just to give them that break. Because if I don't, they're just going to keep rapid firing balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think if anyone accused someone of liking to talk, it would be you on this podcast.
The other thing I definitely want students and golfers to realize is that the off season is some time to rest. Right? You should be healing the body. You should be strengthening the body, you know, Fit for Golf app, do some yoga, Pilates, you know, get healthy, get the body ready for the next season. That is a part of it too. You know what I mean? Like, get your nutrition right, get your sleep back on a good plan. That's going to go a long way to helping you next year as well.
Yeah. And your off season could start with 3 weeks of not touching a golf club. There's no, if you have 5 months, 3 weeks isn't going to kill you.
Okay. Great episode. You guys have anything else to add?
Nope.
No. Just where can they find us?
Well, they can find us online at thespinaxis.com, and then always at all social medias at thespinaxis. Thanks, guys.
Take care.